Yesterday here on Breakfast, we were speaking with the former European Commissioner for Climate Action, Connie Hedegaard, who told us that the key challenge for governments around the world, as they announce their post-2020 emissions targets, is to find ways to combat climate change without harming their domestic economic growth.
How we manage to sort of have growth, have jobs created, and at the same time do something good about climate. For instance, energy efficiency, resource efficiency, things like that. It doesn't cost the household anything. It's actually something that can lower your energy bill. So there are some co-benefits in addressing climate change if we do it right. And last point, we also really need to understand that continued business as usual also comes with a price tag.
That's Connie Hedegaard, a former European Climate Commissioner, speaking here on the program yesterday. So could Australia make even deeper cuts to emissions without causing a big hit to our economic growth? Professor Warwick McKibben is a leading ANU economist and a former Reserve Bank board member. He's conducted economic modelling on behalf of the Abbott government on various emission reduction scenarios. Warwick McKibben, welcome to RM Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran.
Your latest modelling for the government was posted online on Friday afternoon. Hasn't had a lot of publicity yet, but we're here to talk about it now. What conclusions did you draw in terms of the affordability of the sort of post-2020 emissions targets the government has come up with and a more ambitious target and the impact of that on the economy?
So there were two reports. One was what would the impact on Australia be if the world undertook the actions that they're committed to take at Paris.
Yep.
The second study was what would happen, and Australia did nothing. And the second study was what if Australia then followed one of four scenarios of reducing as part of that Paris negotiation.
Yep. And in terms of the four scenarios, can we start with that?
Yeah, the four scenarios were basically a 13% reduction from 2005, a 26% reduction from 2005, and then a 34% reduction, and then a 43% reduction by 2030 over 2005 levels.
And under all four targets, your report says that under all four of those targets, average annual growth of GDP in Australia continues to be above 2%.
That's right. It's actually what the report stresses very much, though, is that this is highly uncertain, and the target itself isn't the key issue. The key issue is what sort of policies you put in place to reach that target. And in particular, the second point was to stress that the size of the target doesn't reflect the amount of effort that's needed. So, for example, Australia, if you look at the target, we're at the bottom end of the commitments of other countries in terms of their targets. But if you look at the impact on the economy, we're at the very high end because our economy is a lot more fossil fuel intensive. So comparison of effort really should be the economic costs, not the actual target, because the target itself is just a benchmark. It doesn't reflect how hard you're trying.
Okay, but I want to come back to the impact of our economy in terms of the fossil fuel elements of it and what it might mean. But you did model four scenarios. What is the difference in economic growth from a larger reduction in emissions?
So, again, there's two ways to look at this, and I think the media coverage has been a bit confusing.
Right.
You can look at the level of GDP that you've given up at a point in the future. That is how much GDP will be lower than it would have been in 2030.
Mm-hmm.
And that ranges from 0.2% of GDP to 1% of GDP.
Mm-hmm.
But you could also say, well, what is the cumulative effect on economic growth? So how much slower does the economy grow to hit that new level? And, of course, if you're growing over time to hit that level, it's about 0.02% lower on the growth rate, which doesn't sound very large. And so it depends what story you want to tell. Do you want a small effect, which is a small growth rate, or do you want a big effect, which is the actual amount of economic output that's lost at a point in time?
In dollar terms, what are we talking? If the government, I guess what I'm trying to understand, and this is because it's part of the political argument at the moment, I think let's be clear about that, is in dollar terms, how much difference is there if we went for a target of 26%, which some have say are just not ambitious enough, or if we went for a target of, say, 35% or 44%?
So by the time you get to 2030... if you assume that the modelling projections on what GDP would otherwise be is roughly right, you're talking around $150 to $200 billion for the 26% target.
Yep.
And you're talking for the larger target of 43%, you're probably talking around $300 to $400 billion. Now, again, that sounds like a lot of money, but don't forget this is an economy that's $2 trillion by that point of time. And so it depends on what you scale it by, but they're the orders of magnitude.
Does this modelling, do these findings undercut the government's argument that we can't do more to rein in emissions, we can't be more ambitious in our targets because it would seriously damage the economy? We've got the choice of, you know, jobs or the environment.
Well, again, we also looked at the employment effects, and so the employment effects of the 26% target is roughly 20,000 jobs. Now, 20,000 jobs sounds like a lot, but if you're one of the people that lose that job, yes, that's significant. But actually, in the scale of employment, which is 11 million, that's not very big. So again, my view is that what the key question here is that the whole world needs to take action. A single country the size of Australia doesn't impact on emissions. If the whole world has announced a set of targets and their whole world is committing a certain amount of resources to reducing emissions, then Australia is playing a reasonable part given the world's position. Now, my view is that the world needs to do a lot more. The question is, Australia going harder when we're 1.4% of global emissions really doesn't make much difference.
Except it is a global picture, isn't it? That's what Paris is all about, is trying to get the pledges from around the globe. And I think it's the Grantham Institute that says the current pledges, which includes the ones known, Australia's, Europe's, US, China, about half of what's required to get to the 2 degree
No, I
Celsius.
Agree with that. So if you're going to criticise Australia, you say Australia's as bad as everybody else.
Yeah.
You don't say what people have been saying, that Australia is committing less than everybody else, because our research shows Australia's actually committing more in terms of economic contribution. And so it's an open debate. We're all not doing enough, but you can't stand Australia out and say, well, we're doing a lot worse than everybody else. We're not. We're in the pack, and we're at the high end of the pack of contribution, which is totally inadequate across the world.
So the high end of the pack in contribution, even though we're at the low end of the pack of targets, and that's because we have such a carbon-intensive economy,
that's
a fossil
right.
fuel-driven economy.
And this is not a new result, and it actually makes pretty much common sense. The biggest losers out of any agreement are actually countries that aren't taking any targets at all, and that's the oil-intensive OPEC economies, who's basically are exporting fossil fuels, and they get badly damaged.
Because people are going to be wanting less of their fuels.
By definition, because we have to get the burning rates of fossil fuels down to reduce CO2 emissions.
So that goes for Australia too, in terms of coal in particular. Your first report that you spoke about there, which looks about the impact on the world of the world action. What is the future for the coal industry?
Well, actually, because the coal industry in our baseline is actually growing, when you look at 2030, coal production is around 14% lower from the global agreement. There's still a coal industry in Australia, it's just not as big as it would have been. Once Australia joins in the international agreement, that pushes coal down. That's under the assumption that no technology comes along which enables you to burn coal without emitting CO2. So it could well be a technological breakthrough by 2030 on carbon capture and storage or other technologies. We just don't know how to bring that in. So again, this is a very uncertain exercise, but it gives you a ballpark of where we're thinking the costs will be.
But if the Australian government is looking at the future of the economy and the change required in the economy, and the coal industry and those who run coal mines are looking at the future, does your report indicate that there is, I think it's an 8% cut in coal exports would be the result of the rest of the world's current pledges on emissions targets? That would suggest going for new coal mines at this point is perhaps risky?
It could be risky, yeah. And in fact, the other part of the report which we did look at was, what if the whole world did commit to a target and Australia didn't? That's a standard question to ask. And then I looked at, well, what happens if Australia has no policy? What happens to the cost of capital and energy generation? And in fact, used some empirical results to try that. And that has a very big negative impact on Australia. So doing nothing actually has a big impact, because it means people don't invest in any energy generation. The price of electricity goes through the roof, and Australia loses about 0.5% of GDP from that effect. So it's important to have a clear set of policies, no matter what the rest of the world does. And doing nothing really is not the right strategy. In terms of coal, therefore, the risks associated with coal-fired power would be rising in this world of carbon constraints. But in the end, Australia has the most efficient coal production in the world in terms of the amount of output per unit of coal burnt. So again, an efficient outcome in the world would be closing down coal production in most other countries and in Victoria, but actually keeping black coal to the very end out of New South Wales and Queensland.
But we can't control that, can we? So we're in a marketplace where we're looking at bringing on, say, the coal mine, Carmichael coal mine, for instance, is one coal mine. I mean, there's others being talked about. This
That's
is
right.
a live
again,
debate at the moment.
But if you did have a policy, suppose you had a global price for carbon, which was the most efficient way of reducing emissions. Our modelling, not in these reports, but separately, suggests that a lot of coal would close in other countries and expand in Australia in an efficient outcome because we're the most efficient coal producers. It's not a story that a lot of environmentalists want to hear, but global efficiency, which means lowest economic costs, doesn't necessarily mean that you reduce emissions in every single country in the world. You cut emissions where it's cheapest to do so, and that might mean in some countries emissions actually going up from an economic point of view, not from an environmental point of view.
I think it's expecting a lot out of the Paris summit, but it's 27 past eight. Our guest is economist Professor Warwick McKibben. Just finally, the Abbott government continues to rely largely on direct action. That's what it's talking about, largely to achieve its target. Is that the most cost-effective way to achieve this target?
Well, actually, it probably has been up until this point, up until hitting the 2015 targets and the 2020 targets, because the alternative carbon tax that we tried was so badly designed that it was always going to be very expensive. You could do a lot better than that, and you can do a lot better than direct action. But going forward, the big problem for direct action is that the costs for the budget would start to rise quite dramatically, and so you'd put enormous economic risk into the fiscal accounts, which I think is rather risky, and so you really don't think, I don't think direct action as it currently stands, without modification, could achieve the 2030 targets. You need to modify it and move it closer to a more market-based mechanism.
Is market-based mechanism another way of saying some kind of emissions trading scheme?
In my view, a particular type of emissions trading scheme, but nothing like what the previous government had tried, because, again, it was a fiasco.
Warwick McKibben, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Fran.
Professor Warwick McKibben, he's an economist, a former member of the Reserve Bank Board. It's 28 past eight.